It was during the 12th century when Catholic crusaders defended their occupation of Jerusalem against Muslim invaders. Their military strategy was dependent upon a network of fortifications, mainly along its eastern border. And in 2004, during a visit to Israel, I spent one afternoon exploring the remains of one of these historic fortresses. It was overlooking the winding Jordan River over on a hill of the Naphtali Plateau. The Crusader Fortress Belvoir still stands to this very day. Huge stone towers rise from its four corners of the fortress, with additional towers between them at midpoint. Our tour guide pointed out how watchmen used to stand atop these tall towers in order to spot the enemy's advances below. Another strategic feature of the fortress is found in the broad bases of the towers. The tour guide also pointed out how these structures would slope towards the bottom of the moat, which prevented the enemy from tunneling under the walls. It was also interesting to learn about a defensive design of the fortress found in the upper levels of the towers, because built into the stone walls were 12-inch wide slits called loopholes. The word loop, well, it originally meant window. And so the word loophole actually originally means window hole. And as we stood there looking through the narrow gap in the wall, we learned how these loopholes would be used as a defensive position from which archers could shoot arrows at the approaching enemy safely within the fortress walls. We also learned how military men would use these loopholes as a means of escaping from a besieged fortress, which is why the word loophole is now defined as a means of escape. And so while it originally meant window hole, it became figuratively known as a means of escape. Now I must confess that I stood there looking through that narrow little hole, and I started thinking, what would I do if I were in there and the fortress was besieged and this 12-inch wide gap in the wall was my only means of escape? I don't think I'm making it very far. Throughout the centuries, the word loophole has changed from a literal meaning to a figurative meaning. And now here in our day and age, the word loophole has become a legal term. It refers to a legal technicality that allows a person or business to avoid the scope of the law without directly violating the law. And it's this legal definition that we're considering in our study this morning. As we continue our study of the book of Ruth, we're going to consider the loophole of love that the Lord has provided to those who trust in Him. Here in Ruth chapter 4, we find three ways in which the loophole of love provides us with a way of escape from the judgment of the law. The first thing we'll find in our text this morning is that the loophole of love recognizes the law's requirement. The second thing we'll see in our text this morning is that the loophole of love embraces the law's enforcement. And finally, in our text this morning, we'll learn how the loophole of love fashions the law's fulfillment. And with this as our outline, I say let's get into our first point and consider how the loophole of love first recognizes the law's requirement. Throughout our study of the book of Ruth, we've watched as Ruth and Boaz began to fall in love with each other. However, their story turned into a tragedy as Boaz revealed that there was a closer relative who actually had the legal right to redeem Ruth. And while he readily recognized the law's requirement, he also set out in search of a legal loophole by which their love could be realized. Look with me, if you will, at Ruth chapter 4, beginning there in verse 1. It says, "Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, "Come aside, friend. Sit down here." So he came aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat. Now let's stop here and consider the way in which Boaz recognized the law's requirement while at the same time seeking a loophole for their love. Here in verse 1, we see that Boaz went up to the gate of the city. And there he sat down. Now we must understand that during these days, during ancient times, especially in these eastern towns like Bethlehem, the cities were fortified with a protective wall. The main entrance into a city such as Bethlehem, well, there would be a gate there. A gate that you could open and close. Closed for protection, open for business. And at that gate, there would be a room. A room with a tile roof, and in this room, matters of law would be handled. It was the gatehouse. And so going up to the city gate, well, that would be sort of like going to the city courthouse to handle a legal matter here in our day and age. Seeing how Boaz was dealing with a legal matter, it only made sense that he went to the city's courthouse. He went to the gate. And he waited there for the unnamed relative who had the legal right of redeeming Ruth. Another way that Boaz recognized the law's requirement is found in verse 2. The author tells us there that Boaz took 10 men of the elders of the city and asked them to sit down with them. You see, rather than seeking a ruling judge and jury, legal matters would be settled in the presence of the city elders. Robert Jameson points out how, in ordinary circumstances, 2 or 3 were sufficient to attest a bargain, but in cases of importance, such as matrimony, divorce, conveyancing of property, it was the Jewish practice to have 10. Now, when it becomes, or when it comes actually to biblical numerics, the number 10, well, it has legal significance in the eyes of Israel. For example, consider how there were 10 plagues of judgment used against Egypt. God used 10 plagues to judge the false gods of the Egyptians and the leaders of Egypt. Also, we should consider the obvious. There are 10 commandments. 10 commandments that God gave to Moses on Mount Sinai to reveal His holiness and His righteousness. So I imagine that this requirement to grab 10 elders was based on this pattern of law, the importance of the number 10 when it comes to judicial matters. Regardless of the exact reason why 10 elders were required, Boaz gathered them together in recognition of the law's righteous requirements. But his love for Ruth was the reason that he went up to the gate. It was his love for Ruth that sent him to the gate. It was his love for Ruth that made him grab those 10 elders. It's his love for Ruth that caused him to sit there and wait for the unnamed relative to come by. It was his love for Ruth that sent him in search of a legal loophole. And in so doing, Boaz's love for Ruth presents us with a perfect picture of Jesus' love for His bride, the church. Hold your place here in Ruth chapter 4 and turn to Galatians chapter 4. As you turn to Galatians chapter 4, let's spend a moment comparing the conflict that we find between the love of Boaz and the law of the Bible. And let's compare this contrast in light of the gospel message of Jesus Christ. For example, consider how Boaz becomes a model or a type of Christ in the way that he was led by love to do everything possible to redeem Ruth, but within the requirements of the law. And while Boaz was a type of Christ, the unnamed relative presents us with a type of the law or a type of the works of the law. In other words, it was the unnamed relative who had the legal right to claim Ruth, according to the law of the kinsman redeemer. And in recognition of the law's requirement, Boaz, he went up to the gate seeking a legal loophole so that he could redeem Ruth from the law of the unnamed relative there, the law of the kinsman redeemer, and the right of the unnamed relative to claim her as his own. It's in similar fashion that Jesus himself recognized the law's requirement when he came to the earth. And he came to the earth so that he could redeem us from the requirement of the law through a loophole of love. Check out Galatians 4, beginning in verse 3, where Paul writes, "Even so, we, when we were children, we were bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons." Here in these verses, Paul's describing the way that the Lord subjected himself to the elements of this world, kind of like Boaz, who subjected himself to the unnamed relative at the gatehouse. Paul also described the way that Jesus was born under the law, sort of like Boaz, who placed himself under the leadership of the 10 elders. And while Boaz recognized the law's requirement in order to redeem Ruth with a loophole of love, Jesus also recognized the law's requirement in order to redeem you and me. And so the loophole of love, it begins by recognizing the law's requirement. The loophole of love also embraces the law's enforcement. Now, it's one thing to recognize the law's requirements, but it's a whole other thing to embrace the law's enforcement. For example, it's one thing to recognize the requirement of the speed limit sign that you passed on your way to church this morning. Oh, you saw it. You recognized it. You saw the numbers on the sign. You compared it to where your speedometer was in your vehicle. And you recognized whether you were over the limit or under it. Easy to recognize it. But to actually embrace the enforcement of the posted speed limit would lead you to possibly one of two actions. On the one hand, you would embrace the enforcement of the posted speed limit by maybe lowering your speed if you were over the limit so that the speedometer line actually matched the numbers on the sign. That would be one way of embracing the enforcement of the speed limit law. A second way that you might embrace the enforcement of that speed limit law would be to go ahead and if you're breaking the law, if you see that your line is over the legal limit, then you should promptly find the closest officer and pull him over and say, "Look, I was going about 5 miles over the speed limit. How much is that ticket now?" Anybody here ever do that? Anybody here ever find out online what your ticket might have been had you been pulled over and decided, "Well, I was technically breaking the law. I was going faster than the speed limit, so I'm just going to go ahead and make out a check. Even though I wasn't caught by an officer, I'm just going to go ahead and make out a check every time I break the law, and I'm going to mail it to the city." Anybody here ever do that? You practice that? Do you embrace the enforcement of the law? Oh, we recognize the requirement of the law, don't we? But do we embrace the enforcement of it? I'm positive that we all easily recognize the requirement of the speed limit law, and I'm very, very positive that very, very few of us, if none of us, actually are sending in money even when we're not caught. Now, in light of this illustration, we should consider the way in which Boaz, well, he was a man not only who recognized the law's requirement, he was also ready to embrace the law's enforcement. Here in our text, we find Boaz presenting the unnamed relative with the option of redeeming what was rightfully his, beginning with a piece of property. Look at Ruth 4, verse 3. It says, "Then he said to the close relative, 'Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me, that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it.' and I am next after you. And he said, I will redeem it. Now, before they moved to Moab, Naomi and her husband Elimelech had sold their property to another family, to other inhabitants, as Boaz referred to them. And now that she's returned from Moab, she's returned a poor widow, her husband's died, it now became the legal right and responsibility of Elimelech's closest relative to redeem or to buy back the property that they sold. Leviticus 25:25 tells us that if one of your brethren becomes poor and has sold some of his possession, and if his redeeming relative comes to redeem it, then he may redeem what his brother sold. So according to the law, the unnamed relative agreed to redeem the property of Naomi. Now we should understand that this man wasn't required by law to redeem the property. However, there was a matter of family honor. And so to save face, to show that he was a good, upstanding citizen, he agreed, I'll redeem the property. Well, that's when Boaz turned up the heat a little bit. Look at Ruth 4:5. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. Now, I like the way that the New Living Translation renders this verse, because I just think it's a bit more clear from the NLT. Ruth 4:5 in the NLT says this, then Boaz told him, of course, your purchase of the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way, she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family. And so while the redemption of the property was merely a familial responsibility and not a legal requirement, the relative who agreed to redeem the property would also become legally required to marry Ruth in order to carry on her dead husband's name. So Boaz was asking him, are you ready? Are you ready to embrace the enforcement of the law here? Are you ready, if by agreeing to redeem this property, are you ready to do everything that's required the minute you say yes? Are you prepared to redeem Ruth and provide her with children? Are you ready to fulfill the responsibility of the kinsman redeemer? Well, look at verse 6. We find his answer. The close relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. And so the unnamed relative, he was unwilling to redeem the land and the lineage of Elimelech. And the reason he gave, well, it was his own inheritance. It was his own inheritance, referring to the property that had been handed down to him by his father. He was unwilling to ruin his own property. Now, I imagine that this man may have been a widower with grown sons to whom he had already promised the portions of his land when he died. With a good understanding of Old Testament property laws, this man knew that creating new children with Ruth would only result in further division of his own family's inheritance. He would have more kids to divvy up his land to. And he was unwilling to do that, especially for a Gentile woman. So he declared, I can't redeem it for myself. I'll ruin my own inheritance if I marry Ruth and have children with her. So he gave the right to Boaz to become the kinsman redeemer. Now check out Ruth 4, beginning there in verse 7. Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm anything, one man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel. Therefore, the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal. That was probably an uncomfortable walk home. But this was the custom. And to better understand the custom, hold your place here in Ruth 4 and turn to Deuteronomy chapter 25. Deuteronomy chapter 25. Because in Deuteronomy chapter 25, Moses detailed the legal consequences concerning those who refuse to embrace the law's enforcement, regarding the responsibility of the kinsman redeemer. There in Deuteronomy 25, looking at verse 5, Moses says here, if brothers dwell together and one of them dies and has no son, the widow of the dead man shall not be married to a stranger outside the family. Her husband's brother shall go into her, take her as his wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And it shall be that the firstborn son which she bears will succeed to the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out of Israel. But if the man does not want to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate to the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up a name to his brother in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak to him. But if he stands firm and says, I do not want to take her, then his brother's wife shall come to him in the presence of the elders, remove his sandal from his foot, spit in his face, and answer and say, so shall it be done to the man who will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel, the house of him who had his sandal removed. I don't think that's enough of a last name there. They might consider lengthening it to the house of him who has his sandal removed and has spit in his face. Imagine the pressure to fulfill the law's requirement here. But this was the way that a childless widow would legally handle a man who refused to recognize his legal responsibility to redeem his brother's family's name. But that wasn't the case here. We have a little bit of a different situation, because in the case of Ruth, Boaz was willing to assume the responsibilities of the kinsman redeemer. It's just that he wasn't the next relative in line. He wasn't the closest relative. So since the closest relative was willing to pass on the responsibility to Boaz, and since Boaz was willing to step up and fulfill the responsibility, the custom was altered to a certain degree to match the circumstances. And so he took off his sandal and gave it to Boaz, giving him the right to redeem Ruth, avoiding the altered last name and the spit in the face. Everything works out. Now with this situation in mind, let's spend a moment considering the way in which Boaz provided Ruth with a loophole of love by embracing the law's enforcement. Because remember that Boaz began by recognizing the law's requirements, which led him up to the gate where he met with the closer relative before the 10 elders. Then, before Bethlehem's court of law, Boaz challenged the unnamed relative to completely embrace the law's enforcement, not only redeeming the land, but also redeeming Ruth and raising up children to carry on the name of Elimelech. And as he did, what he really did when he embraced the law's enforcement, he exposed the unwillingness of the unnamed relative to redeem Ruth. And the reason why is because the unnamed relative didn't love Ruth. Oh, he understood the requirements of the law. But because there was no love, he was unwilling to embrace the law's enforcement. Let's talk about the weakness of the law then. Because the law, well, it's great if you want to establish boundaries and rules. You want to establish property lines? The law's great. When it comes to relational redemption, though, well, you need love for that. Love is the key ingredient for relational redemption. The law, well, it's perfect for settling legal disputes, but love, well, love suffers long and bears all things. The law is perfect for determining who's telling the truth and who's lying, but love, well, love believes all things. The law is perfect for declaring a person's guilt, while love hopes all things. The law is perfect for exposing sin, but love, well, love covers a multitude of sins. So with this in mind, it should be no surprise that the law of the kinsman redeemer was not enough to empower the unnamed relative to want to redeem Ruth. No, that needed love. Love had to be the source of the power that would motivate this man to redeem Ruth. The unnamed relative, well, he didn't love her. However, based on Boaz's love for Ruth, he embraced the law's enforcement by making the necessary sacrifice to become her redeemer. Now, as I consider the great love of Boaz, I can't help but to think about the love of our own kinsman redeemer, Jesus Christ. Because Jesus gave himself for us. That's what Paul told us. He gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people. It's because of love that the kinsman redeemer, Jesus Christ, has embraced the enforcement of the law so that he could provide us with a loophole of love. This brings us to our third and final point. You see, the loophole of love not only recognizes the law's requirement, the loophole of love not only embraces the law's enforcement, the loophole of love also fashions the law's fulfillment. Now understand that the word fulfillment refers to the completion of a commandment. It speaks of the satisfaction of a perfect standard. Since Ruth, well, she was unable to fulfill the law for herself. She was unable to secure her own redemption. She was unable to raise up children for her own husband. She needed a redeemer. She needed a redeemer who was both willing and able to fashion the law's fulfillment so that she could be redeemed and the family name as well. Here in our text, we see how Boaz not only recognized the law's requirement, he also embraced the law's enforcement, and in so doing, he fashioned the law's fulfillment, resulting in the loophole of love by which Ruth was free to marry Boaz. Look at Ruth 4:9. Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's, and all that was Chilion's, and all that was Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day." Here in verse 9, Boaz declared, "You are witnesses this day that I have bought." The Hebrew word here that's translated "have bought," well, it speaks of the act of redeeming. And it's a verb that's found in the perfect tense, which expresses a completed action. So Boaz was actually saying here, "You are witnesses this day that I have completed the redemption of all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. I've completed it. It's fulfilled. It's done. It is finished." In other words, Boaz had fulfilled the law regarding the redemption of Ruth. Therefore, in verse 10, Boaz declared, "I have acquired Ruth as my wife." This word "acquired," well, it's been translated from the same exact Hebrew word, and it's found in the same exact tense. So verse 10 could actually be rendered, "Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have completely redeemed to be my wife." Completely redeemed, completed, finished. It is finished. So Boaz completed Ruth's redemption by first recognizing the law's requirement, which led him up to the gatehouse to stand before the 10 elders. Then he embraced the law's enforcement by agreeing to act according to the letter of the law. And then according to the law of the kinsman redeemer, Boaz fashioned the law's fulfillment, thereby providing Ruth with a way of escape from the unnamed relative through the loophole of love. What a guy. What a guy to go out of his way, to go through the legal proceedings, to stand before the 10 elders, to examine the law of the kinsman redeemer, to stand in front of the unnamed relative, all so that he could fashion the law's fulfillment and provide Ruth with the love that he had for her. Now, if this act of love is warming your heart on this cold morning, then we should also spend some time considering an even greater love. The love that the Lord has for us. The love that led the Lord to fashion the law's fulfillment so that we could have a way of escape. Hold your place here in Ruth chapter 4 and turn to Galatians chapter 3. As you turn to Galatians chapter 3, we must consider that the Lord's love cannot override His law. A lot of people like to think that, well, there's the Lord's law, and then there's the Lord's love, and, well, I'd rather have the love than the law. And so we think that, well, the law can just be dismissed then in order to receive the love. But listen, you have to understand that the law of God, well, it's not just this set of arbitrary rules that God has presented to us to try to make us behave. No, the law of God reveals the holiness of God. The law of God is there to reveal how holy He is. And since the law is based on His holy character, we must understand that He can't deny His own character. And therefore, the law of God is the perfect standard that will remain forever. The law of God is why heaven is heaven. Not only that, we must consider that because of His holiness, He can't allow unholiness into heaven. Because of God's holiness, because of His character, He can't allow unholiness into heaven. Therefore, the Lord must punish every sin ever committed. He must. Now, if you're a sinner here this morning, if you've broken the laws of God, that's not looking too good for us, is it? Because I know I'm a lawbreaker. I'm fairly certain that you are too. After seeing some of the way some of you guys ate this past weekend, I'm fairly certain. We're all lawbreakers. All have sinned. So in a figurative way, the unnamed relative, well, the unnamed relative actually has the legal right to claim us, even though he doesn't love us. The unnamed relative of the law has the legal right to claim us. And on the day that we go up to the gate, the heavenly gate, oh, Peter won't be there. When we stand before the heavenly gates, it's the 10 elders of the law that will judge us. And those who have sinned against the Holy God of heaven, they will be punished according to His righteous requirements. And He will embrace the enforcement of every law. Thankfully, because the Lord loves us, He's also provided us with a way of escape, a loophole from the judgment of the law. And He's done so by fashioning the law's fulfillment for you and me. Check out Galatians 3 and verse 10. This is exactly what Paul is talking about. In Galatians 3:10, Paul writes, "For as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. For it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them. But that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident, for the just shall live by faith. Yet the law is not of faith, but the man who does them shall live by them. Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law, having become a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree, that the blessing of Abraham might come upon the Gentiles in Christ Jesus, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith." In other words, Christ recognized the law's requirements and knew that according to the law, we're cursed. We'll never make it if we have to stand at the gates of heaven before the 10 elders of the law. He recognized the law's requirement and knew that we were cursed, and then He embraced the law's enforcement by coming and becoming a curse for us. And through that, he fashioned the law's fulfillment by receiving the punishment that you deserve and that I deserve, so that those who come to him by faith, the faith of Abraham, can receive the promise of inheritance. That's the gospel message that we find here in the fourth chapter of Ruth. And so turn back to Ruth chapter 4, because there's one more thing I want to point out about this text. We should notice that in Ruth 4, verse 9, Boaz fashioned the law's fulfillment before the witness of the 10 elders. In Ruth 4, 9, it says, "And Boaz said to the elders and all the people, 'You are witnesses this day.'" We see the same declaration at the end of verse 10. Look at the end of verse 10 where it says, "You are witnesses." Witnesses of what? Witnesses of all that he had done by acquiring or completely fulfilling the redemption of Naomi's property and Ruth. "You are witnesses," he says to the elders and to all the people. Now, the reason why this is important is because the law demands that a matter shall be established by the mouth of two or three witnesses. They needed witnesses for this to be completely fulfilled, legally speaking. Boaz wanted to make sure that this matter was established without question. Now, with this in mind, turn over to Romans chapter 3. Because when it comes to the loophole of love, the loophole of love that the Lord has provided to those who trust in Him, Paul tells us in Romans chapter 3 that his act of redemption, his fashioning of the fulfillment of the law, well, it was established before witnesses. Look at Romans 3, beginning there in verse 19. It says, "Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped and all the world may become guilty before God. Therefore, by the deeds of the law, no flesh will be justified in his sight. For by the law is the knowledge of sin. But now the righteousness of God, apart from the law, is revealed, being witnessed by the law and the prophets. Even the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ to all and on all who believe." Listen, it's because the Lord fashioned the law's fulfillment before the witnesses of the law and the prophets, the loophole of love has been established without question, without debate, completely legally according to the requirements of the law and the enforcement of the law. And yet there remains one stipulation. We must consider this one stipulation because it's found in Ruth chapter 3. We must consider the stipulation of the loophole of God's love. To help you understand the kind of stipulation that I'm talking about, I have to take you back to the fortress Belvoir. Because as I looked at that tiny loophole atop the tower of that fortress, I knew that that loophole, that slit in the wall, would never provide me with a way of escape. And so the stipulation of escaping through that loophole would be, well, some dieting or maybe surgery or something. The stipulation was that I needed to get a lot smaller to get through that loophole. Thankfully, the stipulation of the loophole of love provided by the Lord, well, it's more generous. And we find it here in Ruth 3, looking at verse 8. It says, "Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled," speaking of Boaz, "and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, 'Who are you?' So she answered, 'I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative.'" There's the stipulation. And here's the point. Ruth simply needed to come to the feet of Boaz and receive what was rightfully hers. She needed to come and just ask Boaz to fulfill the role of the kinsman redeemer. It's in the same way that the only thing that's required of us, the stipulation for us, is to come to the feet of Jesus and receive what he has for us, to receive the love that he's died to give us. Well, as we've studied the first 10 verses of Ruth chapter 4, Boaz has presented us with a model of the way in which the Lord has provided us with the loophole of love. So we've seen the way in which the Lord recognized the law's requirements. And recognizing the law's requirements, he also recognized our need for a way of escape. And so he set out to provide us with a legal loophole, a loophole of love. We've considered how the Lord embraced the law's enforcement through the shadow of the Messiah that we find in Boaz. He embraced the law's enforcement by working within the boundaries of the law, even fulfilling the requirement of the law. And so we've considered the way the Lord fashioned the law's fulfillment by receiving the punishment that we deserve. He's received that punishment, the punishment that we deserve, so that we then, by faith, can receive the mercy and the grace that we don't deserve. Now that's love. That's the love of the Lord. And that's the loophole of love that he's provided for us. Let's pray.